Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture. With your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection. Tonight's guest has worked as a journalist and a communication specialist, and her first novel, Seeker of Stars, has become a perennial Christmas favorite. Now Susan Fish takes a look at fractured relationships, fractured lives, and fractured geology in her latest novel, Ithaca. Susan's on the phone with us now from her Kitchener, Ontario home office to give us the story behind the book. But first, let's listen to Take a Chance from Ally Matthews' newest CD, Tell Me a Story.
Take a minute just to breathe. Take your time, take a long hard look. Take a moment to believe. Sure, it's a messy life, but you could shine a little light. Yeah, why would you walk when you can fly? There are endless ways and countless days. Why not extend your grace to the world? Chance on you. Hold on tight and buckle up your heart. It's a roller coaster ride, but you're tough and that's what you got, so you can walk into the fire. There's a great big plan for you and love is gonna see you through.
Now to our conversation with Susan Fish. Good evening, Susan.
Hi there, Robert. How are you?
Good. Let's start by giving our listeners a little bit of background about you. We've talked in the past, but there may be people who are listening tonight that don't know your story. When did you start writing?
I started writing when I was 8 years old, but I started publishing fiction in 2005.
Now, one of the things that you and I have been to, we've been to a writer's conference, and over the years, and one of the things that we always find there is the newer writers that are coming in and all of a sudden get to that point where they can say, I'm a writer. Mm. Did that happen for you, and when did you sort of first consider yourself a writer?
I have a couple of answers to that. I was working in communications. I was the director of communications for Habitat for Humanity's national office, and I was traveling across Canada as part of my work, doing a fair bit of writing, and I was talking with one of our celebrity guests that was traveling with us, and I said, you know, I'd love to write fiction. I'd love to write stories, but people just don't see me that way. And I look back now, and I think, well, so what? But there's one person who is the son of the former Governor General, Ed Schreier, said to me, so what? Write anyways. And I think that sort of permission, or the fact that I didn't need to ask for permission, that was one definite step. A second thing was my mother gave me a rhinestone pin that said write, and I thought, it's almost like a name tag. I can put that on and literally name it and claim it. And then I think the third piece was after my daughter was born. She was born right before 9/11, and we had some near tragedies in our family on 9/11. And a few months later, I got away and started writing my first novel. And I sort of put those two things together as a time when I really thought, now is the time. Like, now, I need to do it now, because who knows? Who knows what will happen? And I also felt sort of... I think I wanted to write so that my daughter would know that I was more than, I was a mom, but I was doing other things as well.
Now, you mentioned you had been doing communications work. You also have done some journalism. What sort of led you down that path initially, instead of starting out as a novelist?
I was working for Habitat, or no, I was before that, I was working for InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, and one of my responsibilities was to raise my salary. And after a while, I realized that while I loved the students, what I really, really enjoyed doing, and I was the only person ever to say this that I knew, was writing prayer support letters. That was pointed out to me that everyone else who was doing the same job as me put that off as their last possible thing. And I loved communicating what was happening on the campuses, and I felt like it was a reciprocal relationship, that I was being paid to do ministry, but I was also benefiting from what I was doing, that I was able to spend lots of time in Bible study and reading Christian books and seeing what was happening on the front lines. And I really felt that there was something that I needed to give back to my supporters as well. And it was when I realized that, how much I enjoyed that, that I applied for a job doing communications with InterVarsity, still in ministry, but in a different regard.
Now, how has all of that experience sort of influenced your work as a novelist? Because I've talked to some people lately that have done that. They've started out in sort of the nonfiction realm and have moved into fiction, and they sort of found that there's been a real learning curve in terms of doing it. So how has all of that influenced you as a novelist?
I think there are a couple of ways. I think one thing is that I don't necessarily make a distinction between fiction and nonfiction. I like reading and writing a good story. So I still do work that I guess is considered nonfiction. I do work with a variety of different corporate and nonprofit clients that is definitely nonfiction. But for me, I think what I enjoyed in working with students that I take over to the writing is that I really enjoy people, and I enjoy sort of getting to know their stories. And I think that's exactly what I do, whether I'm writing a profile for a nonprofit leader or if I'm writing fiction. And I think the other piece that I take back to my InterVarsity days is I love the period of time when people are making decisions about who they are. I love that there's big questions. People are university students are often really open to God because they're trying to figure out the big questions of life. And I think, regardless of the kind of writing I do, there's a certain element of coming of age to it, and that doesn't always happen to everyone when they're 21. But I think that's the kind of story that really intrigues me, is when people are figuring out, yeah, the big questions of life.
And I can actually see that having coming through in Ithaca as well, because you do have, it's a coming-of-age story, but like you say, it doesn't always have to happen when you're young. There can be elements of it that happen any time throughout your life. Before we get on to Ithaca, I'm just sort of wondering, too, who have been some of the people and some of the other writers that have influenced your own journey?
I look to Madeline L'Engle as probably my best example of that. She was a person who was a Christian who wrote stories that some of her stories were overtly Christian, some were science fiction. She wrote memoir, and she lived really well, too. She had a really gracious, creative life. And so I think she would be the one I would point to primarily. And then I think I would also go to my writers group. I'm part of a group of now five women. There were six of us, and we've been together for 10 years. And I think it has been sort of an iron sharpening iron experience of going through that together. So I think they would be big influences on me.
Yeah, I think you credit them and acknowledge them in the at the end of Ithaca. So
yeah, we call ourselves the hopeful writers. Not everyone in our group is a person of faith, although kind of they are now. I think that's been an interesting thing, is seeing that sort of rub off and people coming back to faith. I don't know whether part of as part of this group or not, but certainly during that time. But I think what we were aiming at when we got together is we thought there's a lot of writing out there that's very bleak and very ultimately hopeless. And so we thought we're not going to be a Christian group. We're going to be a group that writes writing that's hopeful, that and not sickly sweet, not easy. Easy grace or pat endings and that sort of thing, but real and ultimate hope.
Well, what we're going to do is take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and continue our conversation with writer Susan Fish. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM.
When I'm there with you, I know I'll be all right. When I'm there with you, maybe I can give up this fight. Oh, well, tell me no one has to leave, and supper's on the table. Everything is blue and green, and nothing is unstable. When I'm there, just drift away. When I'm there with you, something always makes me wanna stay. But I'm just this mess of loneliness. I'm inside out and sideways. You see, I sold myself to something else. Now it calls me to the highway.
You've been listening to When I'm There With You from the Tell Me a Story CD from Stratford, Ontario singer-songwriter Ali Matthews. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with writer Susan Fish. Susan, let's look at Ithaca and that. Where did the idea for Ithaca come from?
Came from a couple of places, both of which I credit to my dog. And I do mention that in the acknowledgments of the book. We, about 3 years ago, we had a puppy, and he was too young to be boarded. He hadn't had his shots. And so the place where we couldn't board him, and the place where we normally went asked us not to come because they didn't accept dogs. So we asked around. We wanted to go on holidays in the summer. And a friend of ours told us about Ithaca, New York, and that it was a very animal-friendly place, which it was. And it was a great place for hikes, which it was. And so we went down there, had a great time. And along the side roads, I saw these little signs that said no fracking. And today people have heard that word much more. But at that point, it was a word I hadn't heard, other than possibly as an alternate swear word on shows like The Flintstones or Battlestar Galactica. And I forgot about it for a while. And then one day in the fall, a few months later, I was thinking, what was that word again? And I looked it up, found out about fracking. And so that was sort of my exploration of this environmental movement, environmental challenge that was facing the town of Ithaca, which is in Upper New York State, I should say, in the Finger Lakes. And then the second thing that happened around the same time that was sort of inspiring it was every evening I was walking my dog, and people who know me may want to shut their curtains when they hear this story, but I would walk my dog in the early evening, and people's curtains would be open in their houses. I didn't stop in front of any house, but as I would walk along, I would see life happening in the window, sort of like a stage. And some of it would be people moving back and forth, but a lot of it was seeing collections in their windowsills and just stuff, the stuff that makes a life. And I started to imagine a character whose life was really not filled with stuff, not someone who was too much of a hoarder or anything like that, but someone who had lived a life that told its story through the artifacts that surrounded her. And what would happen to her if that life that was comfortable and well-established and marked by things suddenly got tossed up in the air by tragedy?
Well, and I can see all of that coming through. Now, I just want to go back to the fracking aspect. There may be some people out there who aren't familiar with what fracking is, and it's a key component. It's the main metaphor within the book. Can you give us sort of a 100-word version of definition of what fracking is?
Yes. I can't give you a fully scientific answer, but I could give you a short version. Fracking is short for hydraulic fracturing. That's the scientific term for it. What has happened is historically people have got oil and gas out of the ground in gushers. We can think of the Beverly Hillbillies or something like that, where oil comes gushing up. But there are other deposits of oil and gas that are located in shale rock, which is that sort of black rock that shales off that you see in different places. And hydraulic fracturing is a way of sending high-intensity water, sand, and chemicals into the ground in such a way that it fractures the rock, and then they suck it back out again.
Why did you... Sort of what led to the choice of that as the main metaphor of the book?
It actually worked the other way around. I think that the fracturing was, or the fracking was something that I heard of first. And I was really intrigued by the thought that this was a new technology, that it had huge benefits to people, but there was also a real danger to it, that there is a danger in the pollution of the water table, because most of the chemicals and water and sand aren't able to be sucked back out. They get enough that it's very much worth the people who do it, but there's a lot that's left behind. And then as I thought about that, I thought that just is a metaphor in and of itself of a lot of things that we do in life, that or a lot of things that happen to us. And so, yeah, just the sudden change that seems like it might be a good thing, might be a bad thing, we don't know. But then we live with the after effects of that.
Well, that whole aspect of sudden change is also sort of what happened with the book is your first novel, Seeker of Stars, retold like a biblical story. It was the Magi's visit to the Christ child. But in Ithaca, you move away from that. There are references to faith and religion in it. But I think if you were looking at the whole marketing aspect, it wouldn't be considered, you know, Christian fiction or religious fiction. What led to the choice of just writing it that way instead of gearing it for... say the Christian market?
I don't even know that when I started Seeker of Stars, I was aiming at a market. I think that what I really want to write are the stories that interest me and that fascinate me, that I think other people would be fascinated by. And I feel like there are a number of books that, like even C.S. Lewis. I don't know that C.S. Lewis would be accepted, if his Narnia Chronicles would be accepted in the Christian market these days. And so it was not actually a deliberate decision to say, well, now I'm going to a different market, or now I'm going to be somebody different. But just to say, this is a story, and this is who this character is. So my character is a woman who's Catholic and had been a lapsed Catholic and came back to faith. So and her faith certainly informs who she is and how she lives, how she responds to fracking. But I think it's partly that my characters aren't me. I think that I think of a lot of the stories that Jesus told in parables are not overtly religious stories either. And so I think they're good stories that make a point and tell the truth. And that's what I think I'm aiming at.
Well, people who have been listening to Arts Connection for any period of time know that I've interviewed a number of artists, writers, musicians, visual artists, and that who are moving away from and moving out of creating, you know, just Christian art per se, and creating art—the art that they feel called to do, like you say, telling stories and telling the story of Daisy Jane. Do you think that are you seeing this happening as well? And sort of what do you see is the reason behind this sort of movement?
I guess I am seeing that. I think some of it is simply that people, I mean, there's great Christian fiction out there. There's Christian fiction that I love. There's Christian fiction that I have written and will continue to write. I think what people are aiming at is moving away from something formulaic. And I think that I've written two other novels that have not yet been published. One of them is a conversion story. It's a conversion of a man who has been attempting to find communion and attempting to find intimacy through sexual means. And so when he becomes a Christian, he has to figure out what to do with his relationship with his girlfriend who lives with him. And I think that wasn't me trying to be edgy. It wasn't me trying to tell a non-Christian story, and it wasn't me trying to tell a Christian story. But there's some concern, I think, within Christian circles that a story like that, even though it is a story of someone who finds that communion ultimately in God and becomes celibate throughout the story, there's still sex in there, and so it's something that just won't find a home in a Christian market. And so I think that it's a story that it's where a lot of people live. I think that their people's lives aren't necessarily separated into this is. I hope they're not separated into this is the part of faith and this is the other part of my life. And I think that's what happens in some of these stories is that sometimes things are messier than what the dictates of Christian publishing allow.
Not even just Christian publishing. I mean, there is this sort of this mental attitude out there that, you know, once you become a Christian, all your problems are solved. There is no messiness. Anything that's messy in your life is either a result of the sin that you were involved in before you became a Christian, or because you're still sinning as a Christian. How do you, as a writer, sort of look at that and try and write what life is all about, yet knowing that there are going to be people that may not like that type of story?
Well, there'll always be people who won't like that type of story. I think that the sort of the Christian market for art is a fairly recent construct. As much as it's been through most of our or all of our lifetimes, it's a sort of recent dichotomy to say that this is what must be. I just tell the story. I think I tell the story as they come. One thing that I think about when I realize that my book has a few times where there's swearing in it, and that's something that I look at afterwards. And it's never something that I would add. It's not something that I would say, well, let's make this really I don't know, cutting edge or something like that, or a little rough about the edges. But I think that I really looked at that and thought, is it the best word? The same way that I would ask, is an adjective the best word? And say, is it necessary in that situation? Because I think that really does matter. But I did decide that some of them were necessary. And yet I think what ultimately, the ultimate theme of the book is a hopeful theme. And it's a theme that I think is God-honoring. Even though it doesn't necessarily look like the way a Christian novel might look.
Well, I'm looking at our time, and I'm looking at the fact that we need to wrap things up. So we're going to take one final break, and after that, we'll come back and finish your conversation with author Susan Fish. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM.
Change the world if
life's a mess and I'm flat broken now that all the facts have been collected. I'm guessing I could use a fresh perspective. Well, right now I'll stop crying.
Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to It's All Good from the Tell Me a Story CD by Ally Matthews. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to wrap up our conversation with Susan Fish. Susan, you mentioned that you've got two other novels that you've been working on. Are you working on anything else at the moment?
I'm actually a little bit stuck. I've been working away on a novel that I'm really quite intrigued by, but I've been struggling to find the voice for it. So I hope that it will come to life. I'm working on something very, very gradually.
And the other ones that you've done, are you looking at publishers for those?
I am. I felt that this was the one, because this is a topical theme that I think people are exploring right now. And there are parts of Canada, parts of the U.S., parts of Europe, and China even, I heard this week, where fracking is being really examined. And I think it's something that has to be examined closely before it's done, because afterwards it's too late. And so I felt there was a real timeliness to this. So I actually put a lot of energy in getting this one on the market before the other ones. The other ones are a little bit more timeless. Mm-hmm. So yes, I am hoping that they will find a publishing home eventually, but I'm really happy that this one is coming out now.
Where can people find more information about yourself and about Ithaca, specifically where they can get it and be able to read it?
They should be able to get it. They can get it through Amazon. They can get it through their local bookstores. There's going to be a launch at the Waterloo Public Library in Waterloo, Ontario on October 18th from 2 till 4 in the afternoon. So people are welcome to come that day and get a signed copy of the book. They can order it at any bookstore, and I would appreciate it if they would.
Spell the title for us just so that everybody knows what it is.
Spell it out.
Yeah.
I-T-H-A-C-A.
Great. So that's Ithaca. Susan, thank you very much for your time tonight.
Thanks, Robert. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Arts Connection today and thanking to my guest, Susan Fish. And if you miss a broadcast or want to hear it again, look for archive programs on our website at www.selawministries.ca. That's www.selawministries.ca. And be sure to tune in next week for another look at where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, a production of Selah Ministries, email robert@selahministries.ca or follow us on Twitter @Selah13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.